And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton and the surrounding community via the FM dial at 93.3 FM and the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. And as we promised, we are bringing Zafar Bengash on the program today. It's what you've been waiting for. I know we are going to be speaking with Islamic scholar, journalist, and community leader Zafar Bengash. He is a favored guest on our program. He is someone who follows news and stories on Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Central Asia generally. His perspective is very valuable to us. So, Zafar, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's my great pleasure, Brandon.
Well, and there's been so many news items just in the last 2 weeks or so on Afghanistan, Pakistan, Bahrain, and things like that. I guess the big news that everyone's wondering about is, Bin Laden's dead, and there's going to be a lot of commentary. We're not going to hear the end of this for a long time. But what does this mean for Canadians and Americans? Is the war on terror finally going to be over now?
Well, that's a very good question, and I'm afraid American officials are very coy about this. In fact, they are now looking for new excuses to continue this so-called war on terror. If we take the logic and the arguments that American officials have used, that they had to launch this war because they needed to go after Osama bin Laden, that they accuse of being the mastermind of the 9/11 attacks. Although I want to hasten to add that the FBI has not officially, or had not until now, officially charged Osama bin Laden as being responsible for the 9/11 attacks. Of course, if according to American information and now their admission that they have killed him, then that means, according to their logic, that the very basis and rationale for their war on terror has ended. So the war in Afghanistan should come to an end. But I'm afraid I do not really see any indications from American officials or the statements they are making that they are prepared to bring this costly, unjust war that has gone on for nearly a decade, that they want to bring it to an end.
Yes.
And in fact, what appears to me to be the case is that they now want to go blazing with all the guns into Pakistan. There has been a covert war going on in Pakistan with the drone attacks and American Special Operation Forces carrying out targeted killings there, the CIA and its assassination teams being involved. But these were all, so far, covert operations. Now I fear that they are going to become much more open and brazen, and they're going to go with all guns blazing into Pakistan following this episode of Osama bin Laden.
Well, you can't blame Obama for not following all of his campaign promises, because he did say he was going to kill bin Laden. He said he was going to expand the war in Pakistan, and it looks like that latter part especially. With Pakistan, if you watch CNN and Daily Show and the general coverage in the United States, there's a lot of finger-pointing now at Pakistan, and they're saying, bin Laden was in that compound close to the military training center. How come this situation persisted for so many years? What is happening in Pakistan? Are they supporting bin Laden? What are the implications for U.S.-Pakistan relations with this attitude that we're seeing?
Well, obviously, as far as Pakistan is concerned, these are direct threats to Pakistan. In addition, the manner in which the Americans carried out this attack, number one, they have said openly that they had not notified the Pakistani authorities, neither the military nor civilian authorities. Secondly, American forces, that is the Navy SEALs or others, as well as their helicopters, openly and flagrantly violated Pakistani airspace and Pakistani sovereignty. I can, speculate as to, let's say, were this to be the case in any other country, this would lead to a very serious crisis, but somehow the Americans think and feel and believe that they have a license to barge into any country. They don't care about any country's sovereignty. and that they can make all kinds of allegations, as the Americans have made, that if, let's say, they had notified the Pakistanis that somehow the Pakistani officials may have alerted Osama bin Laden to escape from there. You know, there are all kinds of implications for this, and in fact what this indicates is that the Americans are now going to go after Pakistan in a serious way.
No, it says, I mean, you're really describing something that I've been reading commentary about, and it's that America seems to be acting alone or standing alone in that it does not even appear to trust Pakistan, the Pakistan's government, or Pakistan's military to deal with a situation like this. They have to bust in there and shoot up the place themselves. And this has been normalized, particularly in regard to Pakistan. We saw what happened with the Raymond Davis affair.
Yes.
There must be repercussions for that action ongoing in Pakistan as well.
Exactly. You see, if you look at the Raymond Davis affair, he shot two Pakistani citizens in broad daylight in the old part of Lahore on January 27th, and then very casually walked to his car, pulled out his camera, and photographed these people. And he had shot both of them from the back, five times each, and then he claimed that they had tried to rob him. Now, how can people be robbing him when their guns, they had guns on them, and many people in Pakistan have guns? If they were trying to rob him, why would he shoot them in the back when each of them was about 50 to 100 feet away from him? Number one. Secondly, when the police arrested Raymond Davis, because the people caught him and they handed him over to the police, from his vehicle they discovered all kinds of paraphernalia, including surveillance equipment, including photographs of many sensitive areas in Pakistan, and they also discovered from his cell phone records that he had been in touch with at least 47 or 52 people in Pakistan, communicated with them several times, that were on America's list of terrorists. Now you begin to wonder, on the one hand, America declares these people terrorists, and on the other hand, their own official, a CIA operative, is constantly communicating with them. I mean, this is bizarre, to say the least. And
yes,
what this indicates is, and there are a lot of people in Pakistan who hold the view that Americans are deeply involved, especially the CIA, they are deeply involved in actually carrying out terrorist activities in Pakistan through these various terrorist outfits in Pakistan. And now we have, and of course, you know, despite the fact that Davis was arrested and there was going to be a court trial, then they exerted so much pressure on the government of Pakistan that they ultimately had to release him. And they also used the Saudi regime to try to exert pressure on the family members of the two dead Pakistanis, or the two murdered Pakistanis. And so Raymond Davis was released, and he was taken out of Pakistan. Now, it indicates that obviously Raymond Davis was a very important figure in the whole CIA operation in Pakistan, and the Americans were so desperate to get him out that they were prepared to go to any length, including issuing very serious threats to Pakistan. And so we see that America really has no respect or regard for Pakistan, its sovereignty, or its people, or its officials, despite the fact that without Pakistan's help, America would not be able to prosecute the war in Afghanistan in the manner that it's doing. Nearly 80% of America's military equipment goes through Pakistani territory to get into Afghanistan. Now, if the Pakistanis were to shut off those convoy routes, I think America would be in a very difficult situation in Afghanistan.
Things like the Davis affair were very insulting to Pakistan, ordinary people in Pakistan, and there have been already numerous demonstrations, including threats to cut supply lines to Afghanistan. I know just in the last 48 hours or so, apparently NATO helicopters attacked their own supply convoy. I guess things are getting tense over there in some areas. And the Davis affair, I mean, that's worth looking up for listeners who haven't been following the Raymond Davis case. We talked about it on the program with Dave Lindorf in the past. Certainly, it's very ugly once you look at it. And the sort of details that surround how the U.S. operates in Pakistan are very frightening and disturbing. As far as this latest operation, the killing of bin Laden goes, on the one hand, for Americans, it seems that it should be a time for jubilation, and there is a lot of cheering and chanting over this. But this is a war that has cost millions of Muslim lives. It's cost more than 1,000 American lives, and it's drained the treasury of the United States. So is this what we get for it? I think rational people would be thinking how to pack it in at this time, but that doesn't seem to be the direction we're going in.
That's correct, yes. And what really struck me was several things with respect to Osama bin Laden's episode. The first was that when the story was first put out, the Americans said that he had tried to resist arrest and he was armed, and that's why, and he was hiding behind a woman, and that's why he was shot. And yesterday, American officials, the White House spokesman, admitted that, no, we need to correct this story. He wasn't armed, and the woman that was shot was actually his wife, who had come to the bedroom door to see what the commotion was about, and she was the one that was shot, and Osama was not hiding behind her. He was unarmed, and so the question arises as to why didn't they capture him alive? And many Pakistanis are also asking the question that not only has Pakistan's sovereignty been violated, but the manner in which, as the Americans say, that they took his body and dumped it in the sea. And that this has not only affected Pakistanis, but all Muslims, because this is, regardless of what Osama bin Laden is, but this is considered a great disrespect. Because, you know, Muslims say once the person is dead, then his account is closed, and therefore you should not mistreat or do terrible things like that to his body. Now, the Americans, of course, are saying, well, you know, his face was blown up badly, he was hit in the just below the left eye, etc. And today, Obama said officially that he was not going to authorize the release of those photographs. So these issues raise more questions in the minds of people. There are already people around the world who are saying that perhaps the Americans actually did not kill Osama bin Laden at this time, that Osama may have been dead for many years. And this is a view that is held by many people. And the fact that the Americans claim that they dumped his body in the sea raises even more questions.
I was wondering about that part, because we were told that it was necessary to dump him because the U.S. said it was within Muslim tradition that he had to be buried immediately. But I don't recall it being part of Muslim tradition. Perhaps you can correct me, but I don't think it's part of tradition that if someone dies, you airlift them thousands of miles away and then drop them in the ocean. That seems to be a new dynamic.
Exactly. I mean, they according to their statement, they took the body to Afghanistan. Now, you know, first of all, there is no sea in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is a landlocked country. So they couldn't have dumped his body anywhere in the sea in Afghanistan. The second thing is, I don't believe that they couldn't find, you know, they couldn't bury his body in Afghanistan, for instance. You know, the Americans haven't cared for, you know, this particular aspect of killing people and then, you know, burying them immediately. They have never shown that attitude before, so I really don't see why they would be, you know, talking about this aspect and then compounding their own behavior by saying that, well, they dumped the body into the sea. This is unheard of, really, and I think, you know, regardless of what one's view of Osama bin Laden, but the fact that the Americans say that they dumped his body into the sea is even more insulting. I mean, I think Muslim tradition requires that a dead person should be buried in the ground, and no further disrespect should be heaped upon the dead person, regardless of what he has done.
It's very strange. You know, maybe we'll get some details later on that clarify things. I guess this will be scrutinized for a long time.
Yes, of course.
You know, it's almost time to go, but before we do, there's a very important issue we had to address, and it's not getting addressed enough in the corporate media, and that is what's happening in Bahrain. And, you know, just from what I'm getting, and I read antiwar.com, Information Clearinghouse, other websites, you know, they bring more and more disturbing news. First it was the torture, then the assault on peaceful civilian demonstrators. We talked about this on the program in past episodes. There was now an official killing in that they've executed some people. And maybe I'm wrong on this, but now I'm told they're going after doctors who are treating people that were considered enemies of the regime as well.
Exactly. Now, let me quickly give a rundown to your listeners. In Bahrain, 2-3 days ago, the court actually sentenced 4 people to death whom they accused of having targeted the police. Now, first of all, no policemen were killed. They are saying that, you know, these people tried to attack the police. Secondly, the Bahraini forces and Saudi forces have actually not only killed many people, that's one thing, but there is a particularly gruesome case of a 20-year-old female poet who had recited poetry in Pearl Square. Her name is Ayat al-Kirmizi, who was kidnapped from her house by masked security personnel, and then, according to doctors in a military hospital in Bahrain a week later who contacted the family, that she was in a coma. They went to see her, and the doctors there told the family that she had, once the security personnel took her, she was repeatedly raped, and as a consequence of that rape, she went into a coma, and then soon thereafter she died. Now, this is confirmed by doctors in Bahrain. And as you mentioned, in the largest hospital in Bahrain, in the Salmaniya Hospital, where many wounded demonstrators were brought, the security forces have actually taken over that hospital. Masked security personnel control the hospital both in and outside it. And any doctors that try to treat these wounded patients that are brought in have also been attacked. They've been beaten up, they've been tortured, and now scores of them, as well as nurses, have been kidnapped from the hospitals, and they have disappeared. Even the group that is that calls itself Physicians for Human Rights, they have actually published a report. This was published in the British newspaper, The Independent, on April the 21st, in which they actually gave figures as to the number of doctors and nurses that had been kidnapped from the hospitals. And there is, in fact, a doctor, Dr. Richard Solomon, whose report says that 32 healthcare professionals have been abducted from hospitals, and they have simply disappeared. And nobody knows about them. Their families don't know about them. The hospital simply refused to give any information, or the hospital administrations. And so doctors are now being prevented from treating patients, which is their professional oath of conduct that they take.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we are not hearing about these things anywhere. Even regrettably, Al Jazeera is silent about this. And this is very disturbing that, you know, Al Jazeera claims to be a conscience of the Arab street, and yet when it comes to Bahrain, all of these terrible things are happening, and they are not reporting those things.
Well, you have attacks on civilians and doctors, essentially the politicization of medical care here. And if these kind of events were happening in Libya or Syria, you can bet we'd be hearing about it. There's a lot of scrutiny on those countries. In the case of Iran, I remember, everyone remembers Nada's name.
Yeah.
You know, all over, her picture is everywhere. Where are the Nadas in Bahrain? Why aren't we hearing about this?
Exactly. That's exactly the question that, you know, nobody is talking about Ayat al-Kirmizi. In fact, I doubt very much if many people have even heard her name at all. And even when we get reports from organizations like Physicians for Human Rights, or even some of the medical professionals in Britain, because many of the doctors in Bahrain were trained in Britain, they have spoken out against these practices. For instance, there is Michael Wilkes, who is the vice president of the British Medical Association and a former chair of the Ethics Committee. He has said, and he was reported by the Independent newspaper, that the Geneva Convention and international medical ethical standards are absolutely clear, which means, and he was quoting this, saying, punishing doctors because they are perceived to be treating patients of whom the regime disapproves is completely unacceptable. And such mistreatment, harassment, and torture of doctors and nurses clearly constitute war crimes. But here we have a situation where war crimes are being committed in Bahrain. Nobody is talking about it. When similar things happen, for instance, in Libya, they not only mobilized the UN Security Council to pass a resolution to impose a no-fly zone on Libya, but then they go and start to bomb Libya in you know, all over, and in fact even try to kill Gaddafi, as they tried to do on Saturday when a missile struck his home, in which his youngest son and three grandchildren were killed.
Yes, it's all very inconsistent, the kind of inconsistency we've come to expect at this point. But Al Jazeera, that is a surprise. I guess the coverage has been disappointing. They are based in Qatar, and I suppose there are specific interests that come at play. You had mentioned earlier the Saudi Arabian regime and its role in Pakistan, but it also has quite a role in Bahrain as well, since they have been part of the government crackdown.
Exactly. In fact, more than 1,000 Saudi troops have been sent to Bahrain, supported by another 1,000 troops from the United Arab Emirates, and they have gone about carrying out terrible acts of sacrilege and desecration of religious places, for instance, attacking and destroying mosques, desecrating copies of the Quran, which Muslims all over the world find very offensive, kidnapping women, raping them, going around into various neighborhoods in Bahrain, where they go around attacking the majority population in Bahrain, terrorizing them, their tanks and their armored personnel all over neighborhoods. They just drag young people, any youth that they find, they drag them, they beat them up, and the Bahrainis are also doing the same thing. So we see a lot of terrible things happening in Bahrain at the hands of Saudi occupation forces. It's an invasion and occupation of a sovereign country whose majority population is trying to struggle for their fundamental rights. Now, you see the contrast between Bahrain and Libya. In the case of Libya, the West and even the same Saudi regimes have given their blessings, and some of them have even sent their forces against Colonel Gaddafi's regime. And in the case of Bahrain, they have sent their forces to prop up that regime. So you see these double standards and these very contradictory positions that are being taken. And of course, in the case of Bahrain also, that the U.S. Fifth Fleet is based there. And naturally, the Americans are concerned that if there were a government that were established in Bahrain that would represent the interests of the people, then that government may not necessarily be as easily amenable to allowing the U.S. Fifth Fleet to be stationed there. So they say, well, if a few hundred or a few thousand people are killed in Bahrain, then that's a price worth paying.
Yes, it seems that alliances are different with Bahrain's government compared to other governments there. And, you know, there's significant repression happening there. We should be hearing more about it. I strongly suspect that we're going to be hearing more from you about Bahrain and also what's happened in Pakistan.
Absolutely. In fact, our latest issue of the Crescent has a lot of these details, and I would invite our listeners, or your listeners as well, to visit our website, and this material is going to go up on our website within a day or so.
There are some people who may not know the address, so we should...
Here is the address, www.crescent-online.net. So it's crescent-online.net. And they would be able to get to our website. I mean, even the old website, without the May issue being updated yet, it'll be done by tomorrow, we hope, and they'd find a lot of good information on this website.
Very good. That's fairly straightforward. Crescent-online.net. Now, Zafar, I know you probably have to be awake about 48 hours a day to keep up with all the news with Libya, Pakistan, Afghanistan. It's getting hotter rather than colder or slower there now. So we're going to have to be more in touch on this, and people are going to have to follow along, because I guess there's going to be more things happening. So, Zafar, I thank you for taking the time to be with us. You must be exhausted trying to keep up with all this.
Exactly. I haven't slept very much over the last several days.
Well, I think our listeners appreciate your dedication.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you, Brandon.
Oh, thank you so much, Zafar.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.